AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, here on FYI Politics with Brent Johnson. So, of course, we know what happened during the 2016 election, where we had a president who was elected via winning the Electoral College, but losing the national popular vote. In fact, this has happened a few times throughout history, and there's a good chance it could happen again in 2020. So how could we change the system where we could move from the Electoral College to a national popular vote while still having that be constitutional? Well, joining us to talk about that is Patrick Rosensteel. He is a senior consultant to the National Popular Vote, as he is someone who also comes to us from a unique background, being that he's a Republican and affiliated with this National Popular Vote movement. Hey, Patrick, how are you doing today?
Grateful for the opportunity to be here.
Hey, actually, before I get going, Patrick, I'll edit this out. Did I say your last name correctly? Is it Rosensteel?
Yeah, you did it great.
Perfect. All right, just making sure.
I assume somebody spelled it phonetically for you, but yeah. that's very nice.
Yeah. All right, excellent. Just checking on that. All right, now we'll get back to the interview. All right, so Patrick, you do have an interesting background approaching this issue, being that you're a Republican, and oftentimes people frame this debate as to whether we should have a national popular vote or the traditional Electoral College in very partisan terms, but you do come at this at a unique perspective as being a Republican. So how did you get to this point where you decided, you know what, we need to support a national popular vote?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the bigger myths around a national popular vote for president is that it's a Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, idea, anything like that. To me, my experience has been that national popular vote has been a movement of Republicans, Democrats, and independents, conservatives, liberals, and moderate who believe there's a better way to elect the president of the United States than sort of the current state-based winner-take-all system. So, from my very beginning involvement, I think I've been a part of this organization since 2007. We've always had sort of a bipartisan focus to solve a nonpartisan problem, which are the shortcomings of the current system we use to elect the president of the United States. And so, my simple, answer to your question is I believe that a Republican in Minnesota, should be every bit as relevant as a Democrat in Oklahoma in presidential elections. And I think we should all be as relevant as a battleground state voter in Florida. So, the reason I'm a proponent is because I believe that every voter in every state, no matter what their political affiliation is, should be relevant in a presidential election. I believe that the principle of one person, one vote is foundational to our republic. And it wasn't very hard for me to get to support for national popular vote, knowing what I know about the system we use for electing the president, my experience on presidential campaigns, and my experience watching, American presidents govern to the interest of battleground state voters and ignoring the rest of us. So, I think it's the kind of issue where we can all put down our jerseys and do what's in the best interest of the country, the best interest of the voters, and the best interest of our respective political movements, because I'm not afraid of my ideas. I think we can win national popular votes for president, and hope we'll get an opportunity to do so very soon.
And, as a Republican, I think you're ahead of this as well, because even though it's typically been in years past Republicans who have benefited from the Electoral College, we only need to look back to the year 2004, where John Kerry came very close to losing the national popular vote, but winning the Electoral College. It only would have taken a few thousand votes in Ohio, and I can even see a situation in the future when we have those battleground states shift from the Midwest to the Sun Belt, where all of a sudden it could be the Electoral College that favors Democrats instead of Republicans. So, yeah, I do see this in the future possibly being a nonpartisan issue once we have a situation where a Democrat wins the Electoral College and a Republican wins the national popular vote. Just unfortunately, we're not there yet, and people still frame this debate in very partisan terms.
Yeah, I think it does get framed by opponents in partisan terms, opponents to the national popular vote for president. But I should point out that we've been successful in terms of building bipartisan support everywhere we've advanced our bill. I would point people to the idea that the Arizona House of Representatives passed the national popular vote interstate compact. The Oklahoma Senate, for example, passed the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Here in Minnesota, the last time the legislature considered the National Popular Vote, it was supported by both, Kurt Zellers and Steve Simon. You know, those are people who don't get together all the time on election reform issues. So, despite sort of, maybe what I would call the drive-by rhetoric, on Twitter, that might want to confuse people about the nature and the motive of, reformers like myself. My experience is this has always been a bipartisan effort, that there is substantial support on the Republican side here in Minnesota and every other state, that we've sort of, moved the legislation in. And this doesn't get done without bipartisan support on a state by state basis. So, I think it's less partisan than maybe Twitter might point to, for a lot of different reasons.
So one of the ways we can get to a national popular vote is through the Interstate Compact, which is something I've talked about a few times on my show. But just in case people aren't quite familiar with how the Interstate Compact works, can you briefly explain how this would function if enough states were to enact this type of system?
Yeah, sure. The National Popular Vote, our state-based plan, uses two powers in the United States Constitution that currently exist, right? It uses Article 2, Section 1, which leaves it to the various legislatures to decide how they're going to award electors, right? The state-based winner-take-all system is nowhere in the United States Constitution. It's a series of statutes that were adopted in the lead-up to the Civil War by the various legislatures. So national popular vote is a compact, right, which is Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution that allows states to form agreements. Our interstate compact says when states with 270 or more electoral votes have our law in place, those states award their electors in bloc to the party of the candidate who wins the most popular votes in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. So we use the constitutional power to award electors when enough states with enough electors to guarantee the presidency to the national popular vote winner have our bill in place. Those electors go to the candidate who wins the most popular votes in all 50 states in the District of Columbia, and we have a national popular vote for president. Now, that compact, we have 16 states in the compact already, or I should say 15 states in Washington, D.C., which has electors, with 196 electoral votes. So, anytime we can get 74 or more electoral votes in this agreement before July 20th of a presidential year, we will have a national popular vote for president. And we're going to keep our shoulder to the wheel till we get that done. I'm increasingly confident that 2020 will be the last presidential campaign run under this broken system.
And the constitutionality part of this is really interesting because you argue that there's nothing in the Constitution that says the states have to award their electors to who receives the majority of the vote within their state. Essentially, it's up to the states to determine how their electors end up casting their ballots. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, it's not what I'm saying. It's what the United States Constitution says, right? It's Article 2, Section 1. Anybody who's got a copy in front of them can open it up and read the 17 words in the Constitution. They say each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors, right? That is the power of the state to award electors. And, we know that Maine and Nebraska, for example, award their electors in a way that's different than 48 other states. They do it by congressional district, and they didn't have to amend the Constitution to do that. So the court has been very consistent on this measure, that the power to award electors is a plenary power of the state. That if states determine that it's in their best interest to award their electors on the basis of the national popular vote, they are free to do that. And nowhere will you find the state-based winner-take-all system in the United States Constitution. And more interestingly, those who want to cloak themselves in the founders, the founders didn't even think enough about this system to debate it, vote on it at the Constitutional Convention, right? They determined that they were going to leave it to the legislature to award electors. We have 16 states who believe it's in their best interest to award their electors on the basis of the national popular vote. We know that we can convince other states to join them. And I'm confident that before I'm done, we will have a national popular vote for president because the compact will be adopted by enough states. And mainly because people are tired of battleground states having all the power with the American president and flyover state voters being ignored. And the real problem with that is 4 out of 5 of us, you know, live in flyover states during presidential elections. And that means our votes are taken for granted, which leads to false crises around the American presidency. And we should have a system where every voter in every state is relevant, one that respects the principle of one person, one vote. After all, the greatest part of American democracy is that, we have a body of government that derives its power from the people. The president should derive his power from all the people, not just the battleground state voters of the I-4 corridor of Florida, for example.
Well, I like the argument you're making that under the current system, flyover states don't really have any say in how the presidential campaign goes. You don't see presidential candidates, for instance, campaigning in Connecticut or Oklahoma or other so-called safe states, which is going to another argument that opponents of the national popular vote make, which is that they say, well, if we go to a national popular vote, only people in big cities or in big states are going to see the presidential campaigns, and therefore other people are going to be shut out of the system. But you correctly point out, well, that's already happening under the current system with the Electoral College, and the national popular vote would probably make this more fair and give more people an opportunity to actually experience a real presidential campaign.
I hear that all the time. And frankly, I had the same thought that, population centers would matter more and maybe rural voters would be ignored under a national popular vote system. So I did some research and I fundamentally reject the premise of that argument. The demographics, if you do the research, 1/6 of the population lives in the 100 biggest cities in this country. That includes Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, right? All those big liberal cities. Well, what most people don't know is 1/6 of the American population lives in rural areas outside of metropolitan statistical areas. OK, that's the definition of rural, according to the U.S. Census. So, I believe that the only way to put rural voters at parity in terms of their influence with the American president, right, to put rural voters at parity with urban voters is to go to a national popular vote for president. Because, right now, unless you're a Maine lobster farmer, because the second congressional district happens to be battleground state or territory in a congressional district system, you don't have really any influence with the president, right? So I'm interested in making rural voters matter as much as urban voters or suburban voters or ex-urban voters, and national popular vote is really the only way to do it. And, to me, it's not about where the campaign ads are being bought and where the money's being spent. But for me, that money and the visits are sort of a proxy for political influence. And we just have to right size the influence of battleground state voters. It just leads to, a crisis or claims of illegitimacy or, voters who feel like they're left out of the process, which is not good for the country or the body politic.
Speaking with Patrick Rosensteel, he is a senior consultant to National Popular Vote. Their website is nationalpopularvote.com. He also recently wrote a piece in MinnPost arguing that we should switch to a national popular vote system. And one of the points you brought up I found really interesting, and that compared voter turnout in battleground states versus non-competitive states. Talk about that aspect a little bit and why we're seeing such higher voter turnout in what are typically called battleground states.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough. And frankly, I haven't done a good enough job of talking about it. What we find doing the research indicates is that turnout is 11. So in 2016, turnout was 11 points higher in battleground states than it was in flyover states. In 2012, it was 16 points higher in battleground states than it was flyover states. And I think that's probably the most compelling piece of evidence that flyover state voters feel marginalized under the current state-based winner-take-all system. I think political participation amongst American citizens is probably the most important activity to encourage in politics, because it makes us all understand that we're valued in the political system that we use to choose our leadership, right? So to me, one of the primary reasons to adopt a national popular vote for president is because voters in all 50 states will feel fundamentally valued and will be able to see their vote go up on that tote board on election night and understand, there's my vote. My candidate is winning or losing, but at least I understand that whoever's got the most votes in the national popular vote is going to be elected president, right? And I think that will do more to reinvigorate participation and turnout amongst American citizens in presidential elections and down ballot races as any systemic reform has in a very long time. And so, you know, I think, you know, we can talk about divergent elections, right? Which is when the candidate with the least amount of popular votes is elected president. We can talk about that divergent election as a problem. But the real problem in every presidential election is that battleground state voters feel really, really, really valued and participate at a much higher level than flyover state voters. And that is fundamentally the problem that national popular vote can fix and will fix sort of overnight. I think we all need to feel valued in that process so that the candidates are forced to campaign to the voters in all 50 states, not just the battleground state. And so that we all feel like the result on election night is the most legitimate outcome that an American election can sort of produce. And, you know, I don't know who would have won the 2016 presidential election if it was run under a national popular vote system. The entire campaign would have been run differently. Mm-hmm. I do know that if we had a national popular vote campaign and the candidate with the most votes won, that we all would do a better job of living with that result. And we would all, if we didn't like the result, do what we had to do to get prepared to win the next one. And that the American presidency would have the full legitimacy of the American people, which I think is in the best interest of our country and the world, right? And so, you know, I think that turnout, thanks for raising that turnout point. It's why I included it in the op-ed or the commentary in Min Post. And, you know, I think it's probably the most important problem we will solve once we're all collectively successful.
And final topic for you here, Patrick, one or two more questions. Where do we stand in Minnesota? We unfortunately are not part of the Interstate Vote Compact yet, but at least looking at the state legislature, do we have support from both chambers and both parties, or at least among some members in terms of trying to become a part of this compact?
Yeah, we definitely have bipartisan support here in Minnesota. I am cautiously optimistic that we can have a great legislative session in 2021, 2022. We were included in the House omnibus package last year, so the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact passed the House, was not taken up in the Senate. You know, but we have substantial support in both chambers. You know, we'll have to take it through the House again and the Senate. And then the governor would have to sign the bill. But I do believe that the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact is in the best interest of all political parties in the state of Minnesota. I think we're having an interesting year in Minnesota where for the first time in my life, we might be a battleground state. But I would urge all of my thinking, you know, people out there to think about whether or not we should have to wait, I don't know, you know, 30 years to become relevant in a presidential election. You know what I mean? I think Minnesota voters should be relevant, whether they live in the Republican L here or the heart of Minneapolis, that we should be relevant in every presidential election. And I'm confident, you know, that we can have Minnesota join the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact.
Yeah, well said. We've been speaking with Patrick Rosensteel, senior consultant to the National Popular Vote. Their website is nationalpopularvote.com. Again, nationalpopularvote.com. Patrick, really appreciate the time today talking through how this system would work if we were to switch.
Happy to do it. Happy to come back anytime. And thanks for your interest. Appreciate your time.